Some of my favorite shows are when we get to feature Wisconsin authors. And today I get to talk to a writing pair who have just published their second mystery novel. Larry Mueller here. So great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Our guests are Betsy Drain and Michael Hinden. They are co-authors of the mystery novel Murder in Lasco and of the memoir A Castle in the Backyard, The Dream of a House in France. That's published by the University of Wisconsin Press. Professors emeriti of English at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And their most recent mystery novel is titled The Body in Bodega Bay. And Michael and Betsy, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Oh, it's so great to have you on the show. And I tell you, I really enjoyed reading your book. And it was I think, the perfect time because I was on vacation and I had time to sit down. And I was sitting in the morning on my little veranda looking out on the on a beautiful setting, and reading that book was perfect.
Thank you.
Terrific.
And you caught me, too. You got me off guard. You fooled me.
Glad to hear it.
The whodunit was, I thought, oh, all right. That's a good one. Well, this is the second in your series, your mystery series. You have Toby Sandler and Nora Barnes are the two people in the book. How did you start writing about them? Betsy, you want to start?
We started with writing together with a memoir of a town in France that we went to in the summertime. And then we really fell in love with the area and decided, oh, this would be great to write a mystery. We've written this memoir, but let's write a mystery. And then we needed to draw from something that we knew ourselves, of course. So instead of having a professoress of English literature, we developed a woman professor of art history and had her from an area that we also love to visit. And that's the area that this second book is written in, Sonoma Valley. And our Michael here is interested in art and has been for a long time. And when he taught for ILS, he used to do art and literature. Mm. So he's lectured on art. We thought antiques wasn't that far from that. So we could create a character who has an antiques gallery to be married to the woman art historian. And then the question was, where is it going to be and what's going to happen?
Well,
so we have a couple who are our protagonists, and they're younger than we are, better looking, smarter, and they have more fun.
Oh, I don't know if they have any more fun than you two. You look to me like you're a couple who really enjoys life and gets a lot out of it. So how close is that couple to you in terms of...
Well, we really do draw on our experience.
Well, sure.
You know, I've been in a department of English, and we have Nora having her experience researching and of also interacting with her colleagues, and Michael.
Well, they are and they aren't. I mean, they're really fictional characters,
yeah.
Larry, sort of based on our experience. And so some of the views that the characters have aren't the same as the ones we have. And every once in a while, Toby uses his fists. And the last time I did that, I think I was 12 years old.
There's one character that's really based on my family reality, Angie, the fun sister of Nora. I have a sister who does get into a few scrapes. And she said to me when she got into a really bad one, I want you to write a book about that. So I said, okay, you giving me permission to create a character on you? And she said, great. So we did that.
Oh, and does she like it?
Yes, she does. She's flattered by being in a book, you know?
Oh, man. Having some fun today talking with our two guests, Betsy Drain and Michael Hinden. And they are the authors of a few books, but the one we're talking about today is The Body in Bodega Bay. It's a mystery. And you may want to join in if you have, maybe you've read the book, or maybe you've read Murder in Lasco, their earlier mystery. You may have picked that up. Love to hear from you and what your impressions are. Wonder what it's like to write a novel as a team. It's a little different approach, although many people have done it. Certainly Michael and Betsy can talk about that as well. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org. Talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. But again, the phone number, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. You talk about a certain Russian master of iconography, Andrei Rublev, I believe is how the name is pronounced.
Yes.
And Judith tells me that his icon of the Trinity, and I've had a look at it, the postcard you showed me, but it's just as she saw it in person in Moscow, in Russia. But what's so special about this work, and how did...
Well, you know, in our first mystery, we started out with a character who is an art historian, Nora.
Yeah.
And that has sort of set the pattern for the series. So when we decided to set a book in Northern California, we started talking about what kind of art might be connected to a mystery there. Mm-hmm. And we began reading about the Russian influence in California. Remember, Larry, that Alaska used to be owned by the Russians. Mm-hmm. And in that period, the Russians came all the way down the coast and created forts and trading mm-hmm. posts and so on. And so we began thinking along the lines of Russian art, and that led us to icons. You know, before we got into this, icons were probably the branch of art we knew least about. So it was sort of doing research for the book that got us interested. And this particular icon, which sort of plays in the backstory of the novel, is probably the most famous of all Russian icons, created in the 1400s by this master named Andrei Rublev. So that gives us the MacGuffin. Yeah. Do you know what that term is, the MacGuffin? That's a Hitchcock term.
Oh, that's a sort of something to handle. It's a handle, isn't it? Something you can grab a hold of?
Yes. It's whatever it is that everybody's chasing.
Well, it's, I'm telling you, it's a wonderful, you know, actually, I was going to ask you about icons because there are people I'm sure listening are saying, well, now what is an icon?
Well, an icon is a religious painting done on a wooden panel. They go back as far as the Byzantine period, but the most well-known icons came out of the Russian Orthodox Church. And so they have a long, long, long history. They were objects of devotion, not just objects to appreciate because they were beautiful. And so they're very, very important to Russian culture.
And we actually have connections in Madison in the Midwest with icons in that Madison's Chazen Museum has a beautiful collection that was created by, was he an ambassador, a Wisconsin graduate, I think, who was stationed in Moscow and managed to bring to the University of Wisconsin a good trove of beautiful icons, which were on exhibit last year. And another local thing is that in Cedar Falls, Iowa, which is very close mm-hmm. to us here in yeah. Wisconsin, there's an auction house, Jackson's Auction House, which seems, to our knowledge, to be the biggest owner of or seller of icons in the United States. They have hundreds of them for sale.
Yeah. Why Cedar Rapids?
For some reason, that's where the owner of the auction house ended up. I don't know why
Cedar Rapids. I think we heard, and I don't, somebody would have to verify that he married a Russian woman. And then that gave him a sort of connection.
Oh, sure.
And she must have influenced him to collect. And he really brings in beautiful things, including a lot of icons.
Oh, my goodness. So how, so maybe you should tell, sort of give the outline of the, you know, without giving a whole lot away, too much away, but give us the outline of the book, sort of.
Well, the book begins with... actually, an image from real life. We've been vacationing out in Bodega Bay for many years. It's a beautiful little fishing port north of San Francisco. And the last time we were there, there was a sailboat that got stuck in the harbor, stuck in the mud, and it was tilted to a side. And it stayed there the whole time we were there, and everybody kept talking about it. And one day I said, what if they discovered a body on that boat? That might be a good beginning for a mystery. So that's how our book begins. And the body turns out to be the partner of Toby, Nora's husband, in the antiques business. And so he's a casualty. And Toby, who is a fan of Humphrey Bogart, remembers the Maltese Falcon, where Bogey says, when a man's partner is killed, he's got to do something about it. So that's how our book begins. And the trail eventually leads to a valuable missing icon, which everyone is chasing after. And so we're off to the races.
And Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds.
Well, the Birds was filmed there. And Hitchcock was looking in 1961 for a setting for The Birds. He had a script. He wanted a setting. And he wanted to find some place really foggy, on the water, that would have also open skies so that he could have the birds coming in the skies.
Sure.
And he found Bodega Bay on a nice foggy day. And then when they came in 1962 to film, the skies were bright blue, and he had to have the film actually change so that they put they grayed down the colors. At any rate, we found out that at the same time as he was filming there in the town of Bodega Bay, there was at the same time a political controversy over PG&E. The California PG&E wanted to put a nuclear plant at the bottom of Bodega Head, a big, almost like a mountain cliff that came down to the water. And people started protesting. And the leader of that protest was Rose Gaffney, an old codgery kind of woman who's just could tell it like it is, who had never been to a film in her entire life. And somebody knocked on her door and said, Alfred Hitchcock wants to film in your house. And she said, Alfred who? And actually, when he invited her to the showing, the first showing of the launching of Bodega Bay in Santa Rosa, California, that was the first and only movie she ever saw.
Oh.
So we tried to figure out how could we put together The Birds, this protest movement, the beautiful place, the boat in the bay. And
the
how
icon.
Do we do that, Michael?
Well, you know, that's the process. So we began with a place and an image, and then the other pieces followed after that, Larry.
Is that a typical approach?
Well, it's our typical approach. Our first mystery, Murder in Lascaux, came about because we loved this area of France that had the prehistoric caves. And we said, what if we try to write a mystery in which somebody discovers a body in the famous prehistoric cave? So it started with a setting. And the same is true of this particular book. By the way, to finish the anecdote Betsy began, the PG&E, the Gas and Electric Company, wanted this nuclear plant. They started digging a hole, 80-foot pit, on the head in Bodega Bay, and they discovered that it was right over the San Andreas Fault.
Yes.
And so,
not a great place for something like that.
They had to stop, and you can still visit the spot if you go out to Bodega Bay. They call it the hole in the head.
Talking today, having some fun talking today with two guests, authors, co-authors of a wonderful mystery. It's called The Body in Bodega Bay. And Betsy Drain and Michael Hinden are our guests and the authors of the book. You can join in with your questions or comments. questions about writing mysteries, questions about the book itself, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show, and you can do it right there. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Murder on our minds today, a murder mystery, the body in Bodega Bay, the book that we're talking about with our two guests, Betsy Drain and Michael Hinden, who are co-authors of this book, and they are also, it's the second in their series of murder mysteries. The first was Murder in Lascaux, and the memoir they wrote as well, A Castle in the Backyard, The Dream of a House in France, and both were published by the University of Wisconsin Press. They're professors emeriti of the UW-Madison, so it's great to have our Madison and our Wisconsin authors to be with us today. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Have you read their earlier book, or have you picked up The Body in Bodega Bay already? Or I wonder about what it's like to write a novel as a team. Again, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments. You did such a great job of researching the art that you talk about in this book. And you also, I thought was really interesting for me, because I didn't know anything about it, the painstaking work that's involved in restoring paintings. To me, it's absolutely amazing how someone can have a painting where maybe there are four paintings have been painted over an original, and this process of actually removing three or four of them to get at the original. It's just it's unbelievable, Michael.
It's amazing what these art restorers are able to accomplish. And it was really interesting sort of looking into that and talking to people in the field. Through the internet, I found a wonderful art restorer in Chicago who was very generous with his time and willing to answer questions, and we corresponded, and he pointed me in some directions, and we learned a lot. But it's incredible what can be done with people who have the knowledge and have the skill. And when it comes to icons, I didn't know this at the beginning, but apparently a lot of the old and most valuable icons lost their images over time, because the old masters, when they finished painting, used a kind of varnish, a drying oil, which got black after about 100 years.
Oh.
And the original image completely disappeared in some cases. And, of course, now there are techniques to remove that film, but that can account for why a number of famous old masterpieces may have gotten lost.
And in addition, it was very typical when the image was gone, another painter would come, knew what the old image was supposed to be, and would paint the whole thing over again. And so many of these icons have layer after layer after layer of paintings that are usually the same subject, but sometimes completely different subjects.
Yeah, and certainly when they were painting the same subject, not the same, you would not get exactly the same result.
That's right. And in our plot, we have an icon or parts of an icon. There are three parts to the triptych that is the icon being sent. People are looking for the MacGuffin. And in that one, there are two angels labeled Archangel Michael, Archangel Gabriel, and we don't know what's in the middle for a long time. And it turns out that, yes, there were angels in the original, but they're not named this. They're a different source.
Yeah, very interesting. Sherry has from Spring Green has a question. Thank you for joining us, Sherry.
Well, you're welcome. I was quite interested in the Lascaux book. I have not read it. Was it going to be made into a movie?
I wish. Not, we don't know of such a plan at the moment.
Okay. My mother always has said she thinks it should be a movie. But you're right that it actually would be good for a movie, and that the scenes in Lascaux would be beautiful.
Yeah.
And the action is in lovely places. But thank you very much for being interested. I hope you get the book and enjoy it. It's in your library.
I plan to. Have you been able to visit Lascaux?
Yes. In fact, we were able to visit Lascaux, the original cave, before it was closed to the public. This goes back to the 1980s, I think. Mm-hmm. We were able to visit the original cave. And a couple of years later, it was closed to the public for conservation. And the French government built an exact replica of the cave, if you can picture that, a couple of miles away from the site. And so we've been into the replica as well. And it actually is a marvelous duplicate, although it's not the real thing. But I was going to ask you, caller, if you had a chance to see the exhibit in Chicago at the Field Museum recently of Lascaux.
Well, actually, I did not. I did go to the replica in France.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, so they called the one in Chicago, I think they called it Lascaux 3, perhaps.
Yes, because Lascaux 2 is the one that you went to.
Yes, yes. And I know there is another find, I'm forgetting the name of the cave, that was a cave that was found in the 90s, I believe, that they've also made a replica of in France, the Werner Herzog. Did a documentary on,
on the Cave of Forgotten Dreams.
Oh, it's a beautiful film. And what what it for me captures is a sense of wonder that you have. Yeah. There is a very special feeling that you get from these prehistoric paintings in the caves. It comes from being in the cave, but just the drawings themselves and their colors, they move you in a way that's like almost a religious lifting up of the spirit and a feeling of mystery. And I think you probably got a good deal of that out of going to the Lascaux too, but that film really captures it. Mm. I would recommend to anybody, get it on your Netflix and see it.
But you know, that raises a question about why bring art into a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess our point of view is that when we read mysteries, we like to learn about things we don't know about while we're figuring out whodunit. Mm-hmm. And so we hope that readers will also be interested in learning about things they might not know a lot about, like prehistoric art, like Russian icons and so forth. And so we try to sort of build the books that we're writing around a subject that is maybe not as well known as something like Impressionism or one of the other, famous movements in art, and give the reader a little background while we're hoping they're entertained.
Great idea. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Betsy Drain and Michael Hinden, who are the authors of The Body in Bodega Bay. Great to have them with us, and join in with your questions or comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. A thread of the plot, it's primarily in California, but a thread of the plot brings the story to Madison. Was it fun to write about kind of the hometown?
It was great fun. It was great fun. It was sort of an homage to the town we love the most. And it makes sense that any art historian would come to Madison. We have great experts in different types of art, but also a fabulous museum, the Chase Museum, which has a wonderful library. It's called, it's not the Elvium Library. What is it called? the library in the Chazen?
The Kohler.
The Kohler Library, where Michael and I have both spent a lot of time, but Michael way more than me. And that was fun to bring Nora to do research and actually to find a restorer here in Madison. We knew that there were restorers in Madison because we once needed to have a painting restored.
Oh, okay.
And we found a wonderful person to do it for us. But it was fun to bring her to Madison at the time of the protests against Act 10 being mm-hmm. enacted mm-hmm. and to use the street we used to live on, Rutledge Street, over on the east side, so that the scene where the restorer is taking the layers off the painting occurs in a room that we actually had in our house on Rutledge Street. So it was fun. We wanted to, you know, in terms of truth-telling, verisimilitude, we wanted to have her seeing the places you would see if you came. So she arrives on State Street for her hotel. She goes to the Broad House. She goes yeah. to the museum. It's St. Patrick's Day, and so the kids are out, you know, having a good time with their green beer. And it was a real pleasure to do that part.
It was also fun writing about the protests against Governor Walker. We thought that would be a colorful setting. Whatever you think about the issue, we sort of stayed at arm's length from that. But we thought it would be fun for Nora to arrive in Madison and see a group of people holding signs walking around the Capitol wondering what was going on.
Yeah, it was. I thought that was a great addition. And Rutledge, for me, since we have a home on Summers Avenue, which is Summers and Rutledge are pretty close to
this. Yeah.
I know exactly. I knew exactly where you were writing about there. So that was a lot of fun for me, too, just to, being a Madison.
Another little detail we got is whenever you get into a cab in Madison, you're usually in a cab of somebody either with a PhD or working on the PhD.
Yeah. ABD.
ABD.
All
right,
the dissertation
right.
types.
Makes for wonderful conversations in the cab.
Oh, man. Betsy Drayden and Michael Hinden, our guests today, as we talk with them about their book, The Body in Bodega Bay. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. That was it was fun to have Madison involved. I wanted to talk with you a little bit, though, about your writing. You write about the couple. The voice is Nora's. You use Nora's voice. Why'd you choose that?
You know, that's interesting. Our first book was the memoir, A Castle in the Backyard. And when we started writing that book, we began using we. We did this, we thought that. And after about one chapter, we decided that was not going to work. We had to tell that story from somebody's point of view. And either it was going to be Betsy's or it was going to be mine. And we flipped the coin and the book is told from Betsy's point of view. So when we came to writing the mystery, we said, well, let's stick with that. We'll use Nora's mm-hmm. voice. And so that's how we got where we got.
Because by then we'd worked out how to write together in a way that sounded like one voice. Which I think
that
was harder for Michael. Yeah, I think it was harder for Michael because he had to learn to write. He wrote many of the passages that were a woman, the Nora character, speaking, and learned to do it in a way that was authentic for me. And Michael always adds, he gets the action. He gets the thing moving. I'm more the one who has this characters and psychological stuff. You know, it's sort of stereotypical, but it does then blend together.
Well, we edit each other, and we do a lot of editing. So if I write a few pages, Betsy edits them to sound the way she'd like the words to sound. And
yeah.
when she does a few pages, I do the same thing. So we go back and forth.
Do you write at the same time and together and like in the same room, or do you?
No. We again tried to figure out how to do that.
Yeah,
the way we work is that Betsy writes a scene, she puts it on the thumb drive, walks mm-hmm. it over to my computer, I stick it in, I edit it, I save it, I give it back to her, and so forth.
So back and forth,
back and forth.
Do you outline your book How do you? We do.
You outline pretty carefully.
I would think.
Yeah. When we wrote our memoir, we didn't have to have such a clear outline. We needed to know where it was going, but we both had the same experience. However, when you're writing a novel, you have to both know who's going to have done it in the end and not having it go in two different directions. So we do an outline where we have from a paragraph to sometimes a page that represents a chapter. The book we're working on now has about, what would you say, 12 pages of outline?
A little more.
For a book that's going to be 14 or 15 chapters. And that's an anchor for both of us. And yet there's plenty of imagining to do, you know, taking a paragraph and expanding it into 15 pages or whatever
for
a chapter.
Or changing.
Yes.
Because when we started the murder in Lascaux, for example, we had decided at the beginning who the killer was. And halfway through the manuscript, I said, we've got to change it. It's too easy. The reader will know who it is. And we did, midway through the book, change who the killer was. In our heads, that is.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Then we had to go back and edit, because one of the rules of a good mystery is that there should be enough clues there, planted there, so that a really smart mystery reader could conceivably figure it out. And so we had to make sure that on the character that was the second choice and that's going to be the real person, that there were enough clues there that would indicate that person was a person who could murder somebody.
Yeah, it's I've talked with other authors who have said they sometimes don't know the original murderer turns out not to be the murderer at all, and somebody else, and it sort of evolves as part of the. You're almost like living the life or living the story.
And developing the character. The character does live in you in a way and then can do some things that you hadn't predicted that sort of just come out as you're writing about what the character says or does. Because there have been a number of times when one of us walks up to the other and says, I don't know how you're going to feel about where this went, but things have sort of changed here. And we usually don't describe to each other what has changed. We just say, read it and see if there's something you can do with it.
Oh.
So we have to kind of trust each other that if we go in a certain direction,
we have to agree not to fight.
Yes. we have a non.
That was the next thing I was going to bring up.
We have a non-aggression pact. And maybe, Michael, you can say what the rules are of that.
Well, the rules are if one person edits the other person's work, the other person zips his or her lips and takes it.
That can be that could be difficult to do. I once edited a book that had, there was a different author for every chapter. It was a textbook. And so but I had to write it in the one voice.
Yeah.
So all the different writing styles that we put together. And there were people, I recall very well, who did not like the new voice that they had. So I can understand that. Well, this is fascinating. Were you able to follow through the body in Bodega Bay? Did you have the person who was it in mind from the beginning, or did that change? I think we can talk about that without really giving anything away.
I think that idea occurred to us in the middle of the novel.
Ah.
And we had built up a number of suspects, any one of whom plausibly might have been the killer. But when we hit on the final idea, we both liked it, and we went with it.
Yeah, that was a good idea. it caught me by surprise, that's for sure. Well, you've got, it's coming up, you have some events coming up that I think are going to be a lot of fun, and maybe we should talk about them. The books, by the way, are available all over the place. We've got... obviously, at bookstores, A Mystery to Me in Madison is carrying. It was a wonderful, wonderful store, bookstore. Of course, you can get Kindle and Nook, and it's a UW Press.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's available online. It's an audio book?
Yes, audiobooks as well, audio.com.
Audible.
Audible.
Audible, not audio.
Audible, sorry.
I was going to say, did you voice that? and you've got some events coming up in Madison. And now these are in September, but
yes,
not that far off anymore. September 18th at the Sequoia Branch Library in Madison at 7 p.m. So you'll be what, reading from there?
We'll be talking and reading. Mm-hmm. We usually start with some reading and then talk, and at the end have questions and answers.
And then in Edgerton on Saturday, September 27th, 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. at one of a great festival, the Edgerton Book Festival, which if people haven't been to that, they should go to it. It's really great. And so you'll be presenting.
Yes, we'll have our hour, and there are lots of events where there are many authors. There are ones with panels, there are ones with individual authors, and there's a big room where you can go around to buy books from even more authors. It's a really wonderful place to meet people and hear some interesting talk.
Oh, absolutely. Well, this has been, so September 18th at 7, Sequoia Branch Library, and September 27th at 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. at the Edgerton Book Festival. This has been a blast. Betsy and Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us, Larry.
For coming by. I really, really enjoyed the book, and
selling well? It's doing fine. We were really happy it had a tremendous number of pre-orders from libraries, which is a great way to get a good start on a book.
Well, I'm glad. And your next book is what's next?
The book we're working on now is going to be about Vincent van Gogh.
Oh, but it's a mystery.
Yes,
a mystery with Vincent van Gogh. Well, you'll have to come back and visit when that comes
Thank
out.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure.
Talking with Betsy Drain and Michael Hinden, co-authors of the mystery novel. It's the second in their series. This one titled The Body in Bodega Bay. It was great fun talking with them. And I bet when they have their next book, we'll be doing this all over again. Always a pleasure to talk with authors who can tell a great story, isn't it? And coming up next, we're going to find out why we use certain words and phrases to describe things, and why in a different part of the country it may be a totally different phrase or maybe a totally different meaning. Joan Hall of the Dictionary of American Regional English, back with us again. I hope you'll stay here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.